Stop being the victim. Take responsibility for your own actions. Grant Cardone. I read his book called 10X. It's about focusing on bringing in more income. Increase the top line. Don't worry about cutting these little tiny expenses. I can guarantee you that a lot of these businesses on the side here, they're suffering as we drive through all this roadworks. You know, I feel for you, this is happening, but you need to now start looking at other opportunities because you can't rely on this bricks and mortar business here because state government's gonna come in and just start ruining your business. And that's why online is so powerful because I'm Matthew Fraser and this is Amazon Ecom Secrets. I'll be sharing with you the secrets that helped me go from millions in debt to an eight-figure entrepreneur. If you're ready to escape the 9-to-5 and live life on your terms, let me show you the way. Look, there was a time when I was in $1 million of debt before I had Mercedes-Benz, put it that way. And it was freaking brutal. That amount of debt hanging over you, I tell you what, it can make or break you. For most people, it breaks them. Okay, but you got to push through, you got to find the right answers and find the pathway through it. Fortunately, I found Amazon, paid off the debt, ended up with Mercedes. So guys, that's what we're going to be talking about today. What is it like being in a shit ton of debt and how do you get out of it? Let's go. There's one thing I love doing is whenever you get in the car, you've got to turn the exhaust on, as in it has a mode that's on here. I don't know if you can see that. Right down here, you could make it silent, semi-silent, or loud. Loud is always better. V8 twin turbo power. Let's roll.
Matthew has a bit of a story here, and he's talked about that in one of his first episodes that he did, which is actually his story, everything that he's gone through. And it's a very, very interesting story because he was actually in a big debt, right? I mean, how much was it? Was that exactly?
Yeah, it was like $1 million.
$1 million?
Yeah.
How did you get there in the first place?
When I was younger, I worked at Macca's with my wife. Now, she wasn't my wife at the time. I just want to put that in. You know, I'm like 15 years old. I think I started when I was 13. When you start at Macca's, you sort of get indoctrinated into the McDonald's philosophy, right? The golden arches, and then you look at the owner, and the owner's rocking up in a Mercedes, and you're like, fuck yeah, this could be it. And then you have this dream of like, maybe I could become a McDonald's manager, I could climb up, because they're in this position of authority, and you think you want to be in that authority as well. So my wife is working there. I ended up leaving Macca's and went off and did some other things in music, worked in a music store, I worked as a DJ. And so my wife, however, she stayed on working in McDonald's and she stayed there for about 16 years and became the highest paid restaurant manager, I'm pretty sure, in Australia. She was earning an absolute fortune. This is back in like the early 2000s. Yeah, early 2000s.
How old were you back then?
She was like 21. She was like 21, earning like 150 grand. Package with a company car and the whole thing. Now the reason why the owner, who was a franchisee, right, wasn't the company, you can pay your employees whatever you want. Yeah. And if you are good and you can take a lot of pressure off the owner, of course they're going to pay you, right? Because the owner doesn't want to have to be there making burgers all day, right, and managing all the staff, nasty 6-3-2 door. He doesn't want to do all that stuff, right? So he's going to be like, hey, look, I'll just pay you a really good salary. And anyway, so she was phenomenal at her job. And then at some point, Paula and I decided, by this stage, we've become friends and eventually we get together. We decided we want to buy a McDonald's store. And the idea at the time was actually to buy the McDonald's store from that owner. Mm-hmm. And that ultimately didn't happen. But what did happen is we found the Hungry Jack's business. So we packed up our stuff from Brisbane, moved down to Tweed Heads. This is in 2008.
Okay.
And bought this Hungry Jack's restaurant. And I tell you what, I was 29. She was 29 as well. And we thought we were freaking awesome. We thought we've made it, but it seemed like such a long journey all through our 20s, right? By the time we were about 19, we were like, yeah, we're going to buy a McDonald's store. So it took us, even back then, it took us still a decade to get to the position of actually buying a Hungry Jack's restaurant.
Yeah, right.
And look, if only I'd known what I know now, of course, right? But the reason why it took so long is because we didn't have any money. That was the first thing. But we had to come up with capital to put into the store. And at a very early age, like my first property I bought at 21, Paula started buying property, and we started buying property together. So by the time we were about 25, we had about 4 or 5 residential properties.
Wow.
We ended up selling some of those because the property market had increased. We sold some, and we put some of that money into the Hungry Jack's business, right, to buy it. And yeah, so we thought we were awesome. We're like, we're here. We get to make Whoppers now. This is amazing. And we had to do all this training. But the dream was not just to buy one Hungry Jack's store. We wanted to create an empire.
So the original idea was to buy multiple
stores there. Because in the McDonald's world, that's what these McDonald's franchisees did, right? They bought up multiple McDonald's stores, and they all seem to be doing quite well. So we thought, look, we'll follow that pathway as well. We'll own multiple Hungry Jack stores, and we'll become super rich. Wow. I thought, as I do, I've said this before, I thought that everybody wanted to create an empire. Turns out that most people don't even think about it. This actually relates to something else I spoke about the other day, which is about superannuation, retirement, and building your wealth. And I spoke to my sister, who is 6 years younger than me, so she is around 39 years old. And I said, what are you guys doing for retirement? Like, what's the plan? She's like, I don't know. I was like, what? What do you mean? You have no idea. It's like, no, well, we've got super. And look, I'm not having a go at my sister. This is normal for people. They're just like, well, I've got super, and you know, that's just gonna, when I get to 65, I'm gonna retire on that, and it should last me. Well, it turns out right now that you're going to need $6 million minimum in your super fund to live an average lifestyle by the time 2040, 2045 comes around. And $6 million today seems like a shit ton of money, but it's going to be pittance in 15, 20 years. So growing your empire, and it doesn't have to be, of course, growing Hungry Jack's restaurants. It can be a property portfolio. Right now, you know that I'm heavily into Bitcoin, so my wealth play right now is Bitcoin, although I still own commercial properties. And of course, the Hungry Jack's restaurant is doing well. So, but Alex, you asked about the debt,
yeah,
and how we got into the debt. Now, what happened was, just I'll give you this short story. Bought this business. In 1 year, we increased the sales by 30%. We're like, what? Because we're just focusing on operations and cleaning and all sorts of things. And then what happened was the state government and the federal government combined started doing roadworks. Like right now, we're stopped at the roadworks. They're doing some work. And they ripped up the whole road in front of our store. Okay. And those roadworks lasted for 3 years. So people just stopped coming into the restaurant, as you can appreciate, because the traffic's being diverted all around and what have you. And it was a tough, tough time. Really brutal. You can imagine, you've got this store. The staff still need to be paid, although you can reduce the staff, you know. You can reduce the staff. He's like, yep, come on, buddy, come on through. That was the stop-go guy. The stop-go guy probably is earning 200 grand a year, standing there doing the stop-go. So good on him, yeah? Making the cost of properties go through the roof. So here we are. The sales have now dropped. We've still got all these overheads that we still have to pay, such as wages, such as rent, and such electricity and gas and the whole thing, right? They don't stop when the sales, or the traffic stops walking through the door, right? They still keep going. There's no like ring up the landlord and just say, hey, can we just stop paying rent now because our sales have dropped? They don't give a shit, right? They want to get paid. So, you gotta love V8 power, the sound, beautiful. So,
quick question there.
Yeah.
With what were your first thoughts when you saw the roadworks coming?
When you saw the roadworks. We're thinking, oh, this can't be good, but you don't really know what's going to happen because we hadn't experienced anything before. I think now we do have some experience because we can look back at, for example, the tram line on the Gold Coast. the tram line in Sydney. It was on, I think it's George Street where they built the tram line. All those businesses on that road just collapsed. Even worse than that, a lot of other businesses have suffered during COVID, where the government just came in and said, no, you got to shut the door, right? That was absolutely brutal for businesses. So we'd been through that. And in fact, when COVID hit, it was devastating for a lot of businesses, but when COVID hit, I had already set up the Amazon business to mitigate the risk. And I remember talking to other business owners and I thought, this is the thing, you've relied too much on that one income source and you can't do it. So the roadworks have come through, the traffic starts coming in, and what then happens is those overheads that I talked about, they keep stacking, okay? So the rent keeps coming in, but more than that, you've got to pay taxes. And this became a really big problem because we had to use the GST that we're collecting from the customers to help pay the bills. So now we've got a problem with the tax office because now we don't have enough money to pay the GST, which is basically on a quarterly basis. And so then it was so brutal. Every quarter I'd have to call the tax office and put a payment plan in. Right, and that went for years. So every quarter, I just ring up, redo the payment plan, tack on the next one. Now, I will say that the tax office at the time were very good. I mean, a lot of people hate the tax office, but I can tell you there's a couple of tips when dealing with the tax office. The first thing is communicate. If you just stick your head in the sand, like if you get the GST bill and you just put it or throw it in the bin or put it at the bottom of the pile, it's not going to work, right? They're not going to just say, oh, he didn't respond. Yeah. We won't worry about him. He must be doing it tough. We'll just let him go. No, they don't give a shit, right? They're going to send you another letter and it's going to be a big problem. And then it'll be a letter of demand at some point, legal letter. But as soon as you know that you've got a problem, get on the phone, speak to someone at the tax office. They are human. They understand that shit happens. And as long as you are proactive in wanting to solve the situation of paying the tax debt, they will help.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah, because from their side of things, if you just went into bankruptcy, then they're not going to get the money at all, right? So they'd rather put you into a payment plan on terms that you can sustain. Yeah, based on your new turnover and what have you.
Yeah.
So they can get some money back. Okay, that's gonna be their first port of call. But if you just ignore them, and the other thing too is when you're talking to the tax office, again, they're human, be respectful. Don't whinge about the fact that you've got to pay all this tax. It is just a fact of life. If you don't want to pay the tax, then don't get into business. That's pretty much it, right? Or move to another country where perhaps they don't have any taxes or less taxes, like Dubai or something, right? But if you want to live in Australia and you want to live in the lifestyle that we have, then you're going to have to go along with the system.
It's the way around.
And the system is you've got to pay GST and other taxes. That's just the fact of life. So don't get angry at the agent that's there because they could be the key to helping you get out of the shit. Yeah, and they do want to, right? So let them help you.
I know also that at some point you were driving Uber.
Yes.
Right. How do you get there?
I can tell you, it was funny enough, we're just coming up behind an Uber car. And I was driving a Toyota Kluger at the time. How do you get to Uber? Look, so things were really bad in the shop. It was very, very hard to make ends meet. We were going into more and more debt. So we were accumulating more tax debt. But even further than that, I actually had to rely on my parents to loan me money to put into the business to keep the doors open, right? It was horrible because I may have shared this one time before, but my parents actually ultimately gave me about $900,000 out of their super. So they had retired by this stage and they could access their super.
They give you a super.
They've handed over 900. Now, it wasn't just one time, it was over. It was initially was like, hey, could we get some money? It was like maybe 200,000. And then, you know, a year later, it's like, oh, can we get some more money? 400,000, 500,000. And then eventually it was like $900,000. And this is all coming out of their savings or their super. And I know there was a period of time where my parents actually went back to work because they weren't even sure if they were going to get that money back. Now, they didn't tell me that at the time, but in their mind, they're like, shit, this just may not, they may just not ever get out of this debt, right? And I've got $900,000 of their money. Now, and there were times that I was talking to my wife about, okay, look, if we could just get out of the store for, you know, pennies on the dollar, and then we'd still walk away with probably $500,000 worth of debt, we would still have to pay that back to my parents. And I tell you, we would have. Yeah. We would have done whatever it took to make sure that my parents got that money back. Now, when I found, this is going back to your question about getting into Uber, that was just one of the things I was, you know, I was desperate to get more money in the door. One of the things I did at the time, actually before I got to that, I was selling everything in the house. Right, this is the first thing you do. You're looking around the house, like, I'm talking like sneakers, jackets. I had a BMX bike collection, sold everything that was really not essential, sold, just to get more money in the door. And then, and that was the time when I had the picture of this car, the Mercedes C63, was a picture in front of me, thinking one day I'm gonna get that car, as I'm selling off everything in the house. So then I've now gone through everything in the house, is now sold. I'm now like, hey, what else can I do to bring in more money? I'll go drive Uber at night times and on the weekend. And so that's what I did. And I drove all over the Gold Coast. It was embarrassing in a way, you know, because you can imagine if you own a Hungry Jack's restaurant, most people think that you're really, really successful.
Yeah.
And next thing you're like, if someone knows, you're like, hey, you're driving Uber. Oh, he must be, something's gone wrong, right?
Yeah.
No one really goes out and drives Uber just for the fun of it. And, but I had to do it. And so it was also getting over my own ego.
Yeah,
because here I am, I'm the big guy. I've got this, I'm fairly young, you know, I'm in my early 30s. And I've now gone from owning all these properties to a Hungry Jack's restaurant, and now I'm out driving Uber. Yeah, it is very deflating. And but this is the thing though, is that it can really hold people back when they do get into the shit. And I've got a friend who's currently in a financial shitstorm, right? He works for the government. He's always telling me how broke he is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, dude, why don't you go drive Uber or go and lay some bricks on the weekend or go do some painting or whatever. And he can't do it. He can't do it. And the reason why is he can't get over his own ego. He could not handle the fact that if he was out driving Uber in his town and someone he knew jumped in the car, he would just be too embarrassed. And he just couldn't handle it. Yeah, he couldn't handle the thought of what are they thinking about him.
But
okay.
Question there, were you still embarrassed of doing it, but you were dealing with it? Or were
no,
you...
look, I got out of it pretty, I got over it pretty quickly. Okay. I was like, look, because the way I saw it was, look, this is temporary. I'm just doing this as a means to an end to bring more money in the door, but there's more, I know there's gonna be bigger things for me, yeah? And I just have to get through this to get to the next level. That's how I saw it. It wasn't like, oh, I'm driving Uber, I'm gonna have to now drive Uber for the rest of my life, right? And I ended up driving for probably 6 to 9 months or something like that. I got to know the Gold Coast streets very well. And that's one advantage. But I'll tell you what though, something that you may not know is that 99.9% of people that jumped in the car were really nice people. Really had great conversations. Everyone wanted to know why you were driving Uber, what's it like? And then I would, of course, ask them. I'd picked up a lot of guys who were living in really, really nice properties in like Mermaid Waters, which is like a super, super high-end part of the Gold Coast. Like I'm rocking up at their mansion, they're jumping in the car. You know, they tell me about their Maserati or that they just bought. And I was really fascinated, you know, how they made money as well. So you know, I used to pick up, you know, strippers quite often in Cavill. They'd jump in the back of the car. They quite often wouldn't talk, but I was one of those drivers too that I don't make people talk, right? They jump in the back and they just want to relax, just be quiet. And most of the girls did. They just sucked them in the back. They're exhausted after a hard night of being on the poles, you know what I mean? So I can imagine. It takes up a lot of work. So there we go. So I was driving these Uber cars, and it wasn't as bad as what it seemed. It's just your ego can hold you back.
Obviously, you had to sell a lot of things that you had at your house, right? But you also had to drive Uber for 9 months, let's say. Internally, your family, what were some of those struggles that financial situation brought?
Look, my parents, you know, I was telling people who I knew that I was driving Uber. I wasn't that embarrassed, but I certainly wasn't telegraphing that on Instagram. I wasn't doing Facebook posts about how, hey, look at me, I'm now driving Uber, because it was, in that sense, it wasn't inspirational, yeah. Funny thing now is, as I've become a multimillionaire through Amazon and e-com, now I talk about the trials and tribulations of getting to where I am, right? And one of those things is driving Uber. I was just talking to a guy yesterday who is looking to become one of my clients. And there were so many similarities. And one of the things he was doing, literally as I was talking to him, was he was doing Uber Eats. And I said, yeah, man, I hear you. I was doing Uber. And when I said to him that I was also, had also driven Uber only in the last sort of probably six years or so, he was absolutely blown away. He couldn't believe it. And I think it gave him a lot of hope that, hey, here he is doing Uber Eats, and here's me who's done Uber and now become multimillionaire. Yeah. So there's like a synergy there and a pathway for him. Like, hey, if you can do it, I can do it, right? And that's what I try and instill in people too, is that, look, I've been through tough times, and I know a lot of people out there are going through tough times now, but there is a pathway forward. But you've got to be realistic about it, and you've got to take action on things. You can't just think about it all the time, because thinking about it will never result to actions, and actions won't give you results if you don't take those actions. So that is the pathway. Get training fast, right? Get into a mentoring program. Even if you start off, like even in my case, for those guys who are watching this now, who are like, hey, you know, I want to join Matthew's mentoring, you can start even under that, because of course mentoring costs money. But these videos, the stuff I'm putting on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, I'm giving away so much gold in those videos, and it's free. It's absolutely free. Even if you came and joined my entry-level program, it's only $49 a month. Now, you cannot tell me that even if you're driving Uber, and I know how much you guys are earning, you can still afford $49 a month to get in, and then you get access to me in that as well. So that's something I would definitely say that people should do.
So let's talk about your perception with money after being in that massive debt.
Yeah.
Did anything change the way you view money, the way you see finances in general?
Yeah, look, it's funny because when you're in financial turmoil, every single cent counts. And you look at things very differently. And in fact, what you're trying to do in desperation to get ahead is cut expenses as much as possible, like cutting the Foxtel. Maybe, you know, just things like, oh, we're not going to use the air conditioning because, you know, we use a fan or something like that, right? We're not going to put the heater on, we're going to use blankets. Like really tight, really, really small things that in the big scheme of things make hardly any difference. But when you've got limited funds, it seems like it does make a difference. And so now, I mean, I don't think about those small things anymore. I think about more of the big needle moving things. And there was a time when I was listening to Grant Cardone. If you don't know Grant Cardone, check him out. He's an incredible guy. And I read his book called 10X. Mm-hmm. In that book, it's not about cutting the foxtail, okay? It's not about that. It's about focusing on bringing in more income.
Yeah.
That's the focus. Increase the top line. Don't worry about cutting these little tiny expenses, right? And once I had that mental shift, because I was cutting expenses as much as I could, right? I was in that mindset of I need to cut everything, even at the shop, right? I was cutting out the music that you hear over the speakers, you know, the background music. It was like 50 bucks a month or something, like that's going, right? But so I've been through all that. I was rearranging the bin pickups, right? Anything I could do to try and save money. And of course, you're cutting labor and also, you know, I'm working on the floor too, making all the burgers and on drive-thru. But once I heard this from Grant, just you need to focus on the top line and bringing in more revenue. I was like, wow, that was like a whole mental shift for me. And then I would reread the 10X book. I'd listen to it over and over. Even when I was out doing Uber, every moment I'd get up, you'd be like listening to podcasts and things like that. And I was absorbing so much of Grant Cardone at the time. And he definitely has been a huge influence on my life and my success now. He's just getting his mindset on things. And so that's my recommendation to you, is focus on the top line, bringing in more income. There is a balance, okay? I'm not saying that you shouldn't cut anything. I mean, cut things where possible, right? Because that's going to be the most immediate effect to your budget. But don't let that be the sole focus. And I'll give you the ideas. Some people would focus on, I'm gonna hunt around and find the cheapest petrol, okay? I wouldn't worry about that. Yeah. Right. The petrol price between one to the other, you know, if it's $1.70 and $1.80 is nothing, okay? If it just happens that the $1.70 place is right there and you can jump in there and get the fuel, sure, but I wouldn't be hunting around and making it and taking up mental space.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And so you want to shift it so that your focus every day is, how can I make more money? How can I bring in, how can I grow my business? You know, it might even be something as simple as, if you're working the 9 to 5, how can I get a pay rise?
Yeah.
Most people probably don't even think of that, because they're too busy cutting, you know, looking for $1.70 fuel or something, right? How can I get a pay rise? Go and talk to the owner of the business. Try and get a promotion. Maybe even change jobs. Maybe go from a government sector job, let's say, where there's minimal chance of getting bonuses and things like that, and move into a sales role. Maybe like something like selling cars. Yeah, selling cars would be incredible, because you could negotiate higher income based on the work that you put in. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get reward for the work you put in.
Okay? Mindset wise, what would you say to people who are always in the complaining mentality?
Oh,
it's because of this, it's because I'm not getting much from here, but it's because of that.
Yeah.
But not taking action towards anything.
This is another lesson I got from Grant Cardone, which was to stop being the victim.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know a lot of people who, look, I was doing the same thing. You know, the government had come in, they'd done all the roadworks, my business is now suffering. You know, poor me, I'm now having driving Uber and all that rest of it, and then $1 million of debt. And Grant said, stop being the victim. Take responsibility for your own actions. And even at that point, I'm thinking, yeah, but it wasn't my actions. It was the government that came in and fucked me. But then I was like, no, you know what? It is my fault. No one forced me to go and buy the Hungry Jack's store.
Yeah.
Right? I bought the Hungry Jack's store with my wife. We bought the Hungry Jack's store. And we should have done more due diligence, because as you can appreciate, it's not like the government just waltzes in one day and just starts redoing a highway, mm-hmm. right? They would have been planning that for years. Yeah. So we should have known that there was a highway coming down the pipeline. Right, and that was the lesson. But you know what? We didn't do any due diligence of like what's going to be happening around the area within the next sort of year, right? We were just so wrapped up in, oh, we're going to get this business and it's going to be awesome and we're going to make all this money and stuff everything else. You know, nothing can wreck a Hungry Jack's store, right? Now, of course, after that time, we find out from even McDonald's owners, right? Similar type of situations. Because we always thought, oh, well, if you own a McDonald's, everything's hunky-dory, it'd be fantastic. No problems. Just not the case, right? Just things can happen all the time. So you've got to be prepared for the downside. And I think that's probably one really big lesson coming out of the shitstorm is that I prepare now for bad times. And what I mean by that is as I started making a lot of money and I was buying up commercial property, I was putting in enough deposit into the commercial property so that the loan was positively geared, right? The property was positively geared, meaning it was making more money than it was what it was costing me in interest repayments. And I deliberately did that. Now, a lot of people would say, oh, you shouldn't do that because you want to have a higher debt so you can have a higher tax write-off.
Yeah.
And yes, there's an argument for that, but having been through this shit, I'm like, no, I'm going to put more money down in this deal. I'm going to have more equity. And of course, I had the money to do that. Because what happens if this other, my main business goes down, if I'm having to chip money into this other property all the time and my main business goes down, I'm stuffed, right? Because I've geared the property up higher than what the rent is coming in at.
Yeah.
So that's just one thing that I do. And I always now keep a reserve of cash at all times. And now for me, it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash available at any one time. So if something bad happens and I need to tap into just money, I've just got it there. Now, it's across different accounts. I've got, and I've got a lot in Bitcoin as well, right? The thing with Bitcoin is it's liquid, right? So at any moment, I can just sell it and I can get the money. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to sell it, but I'm talking in bad times if shit really hits the fan.
One last question to potentially another one too, but just before wrapping it up. Do you think that ultimately that pressure that you had on you, that massive stress, because it was a big stress, hey, that massive stress that you had on top of your shoulders of being in debt, do you think that is what actually propelled you forward?
Yeah.
That made basically make you move your ass into achieving everything that you've achieved so far?
So I said earlier that being in a lot of debt is either going to make you or break you. And for me, it made me, for sure. For most people, it breaks them. They look for the easy way out. They're going to go into bankruptcy. Unfortunately, some people check out. The stress just becomes way too much. They just simply cannot handle it. They get divorced from their wife or husband, yeah, because they're fighting about money. And most reasons why people break up is to do with money. Yeah, that is actually the facts. Now, for myself, Paula and I came from nothing. So when we had money and then we didn't have money, it was the same thing. We didn't get together because we were both rich or something, right? So, and we were in the game together, right? We were there supporting each other every single day. And so when everything went bad, we were solution focused. How can we get through this, right? And so that's what, by sticking together and supporting each other, that's what got us through it. Now, being in that much stress also, I'd say it built up my shins, right?
Yeah.
And so now when things come my way, it's nothing, right? Because I've built up so much resilience now against these huge stressful situations.
So would it be safe to say that more than a punishment that life was throwing at you was an opportunity instead? Even though it sucked when you had to go through it, right?
The fact that I was in so much debt has actually ultimately became the opportunity. Because I can tell you, I've got a friend right now who he earns $100,000 a year as a pension, right? And there's just no incentive for him whatsoever to go and earn more money or create a business. And he's delved in the business side of things, but when things kind of got too hard, it was like, I've already got $100,000 coming in. Now, so his back's not up against the wall, you know? And
Sometimes you need
when I was, when I had my back up against the wall, it was like, we have, this has to work. And I was still throwing money at the Amazon program and testing and getting products and testing ads and all sorts of things. And it's, and it didn't work overnight. Yeah, it's not like the very first thing I did just turned out to be a $1 million idea, right? But I was getting experience, I was learning, I was building up my knowledge, which ultimately led to just never giving up. And then because of that, it just took one thing to happen. Just one thing to happen. That's why I say, Bill, you're 2 seconds away from a $1 million idea. You could, the next person you meet at I don't know, some networking event, the magazine that you pick up and you flick through and you see a product in the back of the magazine, that could be the $1 million product, and that'd be it.
Cool.
And if you give up now, you know, you've lost everything.
If you had to choose between two different realities, the first one being you didn't get into that much debt and that everything went well with the Hungry Jack stores, you would still have been wealthy. You would have done all right. You would have done actually better than average.
No, let me say something.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is that if I hadn't had gone through all this financial turmoil, let's say the Hungry Jack store just was good, right? Mm-hmm. The Roborocks never came, we just made money from that. It would have been an okay income, and I probably would have thought it was quite good.
Yeah.
But in comparison now to Amazon mm-hmm. and e-com, it makes Hungry Jack's now look like a side project, right? And so I'm thankful now that it happened. And it's also taught me, obviously, more resilience, but that there's just so much more opportunity and money in the world ready for you to go and get. You just got to take action to get the knowledge of how to go and find those opportunities. This is exactly what I'm talking about, guys. You can see all these roadworks here that are straight down the Gold Coast Highway. I can guarantee you that a lot of these businesses on the side here, they're suffering. And this is exactly what we went through. And it's almost like I want to go into every business and say, this is, you know, I feel for you, this is happening, but you need to now start looking at other opportunities because you can't rely on this bricks and mortar business here, because something like what's happening right now, the state government's going to come in and just start just ruining your business. And that's why online is so powerful, because it gives you, look, put it this way, these businesses here, their customer is this circumference. When you're online, the world is your customer. So guys, it's been an interesting drive today as we drive through all this roadworks, as I shared my story about suffering from roadworks, just like these businesses are suffering now. But just know that there is opportunity out there for you. Even if you're one of these businesses and you're thinking that the world's gonna end, it's not, you can get through it. And I would just say, take action on yourself, get educated, and start learning the online space. All right, take care. All right, we're in Tweed Heads. We're in Tweed Heads South. We're about to drop by my Hungry Jack store, where it all started, where my online career started, because of these infamous roadworks that came through. And I'm going to point out to you exactly where the roadworks were and how it affected the business so much, but ultimately led me to online sales and doing 8 figures. Now, the Hungry Jack store, just by the way, is actually doing quite well now. After all these years where I was able to make all this money using Amazon and e-commerce, paid off all the debt, paid the tax office, paid back my parents, got on top of everything, the store is now profitable, it's doing really well. And what was going to, well, I was in $1 million of debt before. I'm about to spend $1 million on renovating the store now. Let's go take a look at this Hungry Jack store. This is the store that myself and my wife built over the past 15 years. And it's been tough, but it's been worth it. Let's go check it out. Now this store is about to go through a full and complete renovation. The whole interior is going to be completely gutted. all this area here will be ripped out. New flooring, new doors, new counter. There's been many a times that I've scrubbed these floors, these very floors, I've scrubbed them that many times. Now, for all my American friends who are watching this, you're probably thinking, what the hell is Hungry Jack's? It's actually a franchise of Burger King. Basically the same, most of the menus the same. We have the Whopper here, the famous Hungry Jack's Whopper or Burger King Whopper. And what happened back in, is about 50 years ago when Jack Cowan, the owner of Hungry Jack's, wanted to open up franchises in Australia, the Burger King name was taken. So they couldn't use that name in Australia. So ultimately, Jack Cowan, the owner, called it Hungry Jack's. Paul and I were here every single day making the Whoppers. I was on drive-through. One of my favorite jobs actually was working the order taking. Welcome to Hungry Jack's, can I take your order please? Famous words, right? Now what happened in 2010, this is where the roadworks happened. And you can see just up here, see that bridge? That never used to be there, okay? And there was a different type of bridge. They had to use explosives to demolish it. The old highway here used to go up and over the hill. And what they ended up doing was carving out the hill. So as you can imagine, it wasn't just like they changed the traffic lights here, right? This whole stretch of road was put in with a whole bunch of witches' hats, and they were directing traffic every which way to try and prevent traffic from getting into the store. So straight away, 30% sales has dropped, and we struggled for 3 whole years. But what happens is you build up debt over 3 years, then you've got to try and get out of the debt. So even though the sales had come back after sort of about 4 years, we had to keep paying off the previous debt. And that's when I knew we had to find something else. And so that's when I ultimately discovered Amazon. And I was only looking online. I came across an Amazon course. I shelled out the $2,000 or $3,000 that I didn't even have to pay for that course. And then in just a few short years, that has now led me to do over $50 million in sales and built up an online empire that spans right across the whole world. The contrast between the two is you can have a Hungry Jack's restaurant, but your customers are only based within a few kilometers from the store. But when you have an online business, your customers are the entire world. And that's the difference. Thanks for tuning into Amazon Ecom Secrets. If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to show your support is to give a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And make sure to subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss an episode. You can also find more at I'm Matthew Fraser on all social media platforms. Thanks so much. Take care.